Troy Dodds, and welcome to the On The Record podcast presented by The Western Weekender. On this podcast, I'm joined by special guests who all have such great stories to tell about Penrith and the role they've played in our city. They are Penrith stories told by Penrith people. Today, my special guest is Greg Taylor. Greg is the director of Stanton and Taylor Real Estate, the longest running real estate business in Penrith. He's played a prominent role in Penrith's business community for decades. I really hope you enjoy our chat. Greg, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Troy.
Now, the question we always start with, where were you born and where did you grow up?
Okay, well, I was born in Nepean Hospital, grew up in Penrith, spent all my life in Penrith.
So, okay. What year were you born?
56.
Okay, so what is growing up in Penrith like in the 1960s?
We used to do things like, so I played cricket and soccer for the RSL. And the cricket coach, we used to pick up all the kids in the ute,
yeah,
and we drive to wherever we were playing with 12 of us in the front and the back of a ute. And you can't do that today.
No, definitely not. What suburbs did you grow up in?
Penrith itself.
In
Penrith. Yeah, I was. In Stafford Street from time I was about 4 till 6, I think.
Yep.
And then we moved to High Street opposite the old squash courts.
Okay, yep.
Up near Parker Street. And then we moved out to Orchard Hills on the 5 acres. And I grew up playing golf every day.
Yep.
Get off the school bus and Mum would send us over to the golf course. Don't come back until it's dark. My brother and I played golf every day.
And what about Penrith itself? We've had previous guests who've kind of grown up in that era as well. Pretty sleepy country town vibes in that era?
Oh, it was. It was a very quiet place. Always remember when we went on holidays and we came back, you'd come back down the highway because there was no freeway.
Mm.
We come back down the highway over the hill at St Mary's and you could see the mountains and look at Penrith and you'd think, oh, great, we're only 20 minutes from home.
it's a different time.
Yeah, it was.
Now, you obviously went to university and I understand you studied accounting.
Yes.
What drove you to that? What was the reasoning behind that? And where did you go to uni?
Okay, I went to University of Technology, which was brand new in those days, and when I left school, I wanted to be just like Dad, a real estate agent. I thought that looked pretty good.
Okay, so you did want to follow that from early on.
Yeah. I was always interested in it. But he said, look, you're only 18. Go and get a job, get a real job for 10 years.
Yeah.
And then if you still want to do it, come back and talk to me then. I thought, oh, well, okay. So I went to uni, got the accounting degree, business studies, and got a job with Pricewaterhouse. I worked for them part-time and did uni part-time. So I started working for Pricewaterhouse in 76.
Okay.
I spent 8 years working for them, and I was an audit specialist, mm-hmm. So I hated doing tax returns.
Yeah,
I had to do it once when I broke my leg, and the audit department was upstairs, and so they sat me downstairs in an office and gave me a shoebox full of receipts.
Yep.
And said, "Here you go, do this person's tax return." And I looked at all the receipts and the mess, and I thought, "Holy shit, is this what people give their accountant?" And so anyway, I finished it about 4 o'clock that afternoon, and I said to the boss, if I can get up the stairs, can I get back out on audit? Because I hate this tax stuff. So he said, right, okay, let's see how you go. And getting up there's two flights of stairs with crutches.
Yep.
Wasn't easy. So I dropped one of the crutches halfway up and everybody came out of their offices and thought, geez, what's happened?
Yeah.
And here I am standing halfway up the stairs and thinking, what am I going to do? I made it to the top, got out on audit next day, so I never had to do another tax return.
And I understand it that you actually worked with quite a lot of local companies while in that job.
Yeah. We did a lot of big jobs. Panthers was one of the main ones. Mm-hmm. Penrith Council, Nepean Hospital, Governor Phillip.
Yep.
Springwood, the band club. So we did a lot of, you know, like prominent businesses, and I got to see some pretty funny things back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Oh, yeah. Some of the systems, they were vastly different to what they have today. Yeah.
No MYOB and Xero running your accounting in those days.
Oh, no. Well, the poker machines were emptying 20 cents and 10 cent pieces out of them. Yeah, like, you don't do that anymore.
But yeah.
They were pretty different.
You mentioned your dad there and you wanting to follow his. So just to reverse back, you'd obviously watched him in his job ever since you can remember. He was very prominent in real estate. We mentioned it in the intro, the longest running real estate business, not just in Penrith, but I think almost in Western Sydney. What drove him to real estate? Do you remember? Do you remember those earlier days?
Yeah.
In terms of him opening the business and what you may have been told there?
Yeah, I do. He had three jobs at the time. He was working for, I think it was called Fletcher Jones, as a pants salesman.
Yep.
He was working in the movies. He was the little man with the torch that walked around shining the torch on people, going, hey, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Yep.
and he started the real estate business. And I always remember one of the things he told me, his first sale was a block of land in Cambridge Park, and he sold it to his best friend, a doctor, Dr. Pitarino, and his friend said to him, look, I want to be your first client, so what have you got for sale? Whatever it is, I'll buy it.
Yep.
And so he bought the block of land, and he was his first ever client. And we did business for him for about 45 years.
Yep.
And then, but I just saw what he did and how he went about it. And I thought, yeah, that's something I think I'd really like to do.
Mm.
And I think he got the same buzz out of doing when people buy a house and they're happy as all get out.
Yeah.
When they sell, if they get a good figure, they're happy again.
It's one of life's biggest moments in both areas, isn't it? Yeah, and you're part of that.
It is, yeah, and you get to be part of it. And it's just a really nice feeling, you know. You've done something for somebody that's really big thing in their life.
Yep.
And you've helped them, and we try to we operate on the business that we've got a good name in real estate.
Yep.
It's simple, but it works.
Now, the office, is it in the same location that it is today? Where was the first office that he opened?
The first office was a few doors up the road from where we are now.
Okay.
It was just a little shop.
And you're now on High Street at...
371 High
Street. I was going to say 373. I was close.
Yeah, we're there too.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. It was about three or four doors closer to the pub.
Yep.
And when Walton's building got sold, Dad was in a position to buy it. He grabbed that, and when Walton's moved out, and they moved down the bottom end of High Street, on the corner of Station, we moved in, and that's where we are today.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, well, fast forwarding a little bit there, but going back to your story, you obviously do the apprenticeship, work in the accounting business, and when do you get the opportunity to enter the real estate world and finally follow that dream up?
Okay, well, in 1983, Pricewaterhouse wanted me to go to New Guinea, and New Guinea wasn't a real safe place at that time.
Yep.
You had to live in compounds and your security. And I thought, geez, I don't know about that. Yeah. I got a 2-year-old son and a baby on the way. I just don't think that looks like a great place. Anyway, I said to them, if you give me 3 years in Europe, I'll go to New Guinea for 3 years.
Okay.
And
negotiation skills showing through there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, I didn't get the 3 years in Europe. They said, no, you got to go to New Guinea first. And I thought about it and I said, well, no, I don't think I want to do that, because once I go to New Guinea, the only way you get out is when they find somebody else who's prepared to go.
Yep.
So until that happens, you stay. And I thought, no, I don't really want to spend a long time in New Guinea.
Yeah.
So Dad had a situation where he had two salespeople, and one of them resigned and he'd had enough. And the other one was on holidays. That was my auntie.
Yep.
And I thought, well, if I'm going to do it, now's probably the time. So in 1983, August 83, I said to Dad, okay, I'm ready. And it all started there.
Do you remember the first house that you sold?
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah. Dad's best friend was Jack Redden, and he was a house builder. And so he was building Speckies at the time. And Dad said to me, look, we've got to sell Jack's properties as a priority, so anything you can do to sell those is always good.
Yep.
And I on the Thursday of the first week, a couple of girls came in the office and said, we want to buy a house. And I said, oh, I've got just the house for you. Come and have a look. Yeah. So, and the house was only a frame at that stage.
Yep.
So anyway, we went out, had a look, and I had almost the identical house around the corner.
Okay, which suburb is this? This is
in South Penrith.
South Penrith,
so, yeah, in Diana Place.
Yep.
Anyway, I took the girls out to show them the property, and they could see it, but it was hard for them because it wasn't finished.
Yeah.
And I thought quick, and I thought, hey, come around the corner, I'll show you my place. It's finished.
Yeah.
This is what he does. So I surprised my wife. I said, hey, she had the baby and she was about 6 months pregnant. Anyway, so surprised her. She wasn't expecting a bit because there's no mobile phones.
Yeah,
back then.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't call her. So I just turned up around the corner and said, hey, I want to show these girls through the house. Who are they? So anyway, they had a look and they said, oh, wow, this is really good. You know, like, we want to buy it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I went back to the office and said to Dad, I got a buyer for Jack's place in Diana Place. And he said, oh, you better ring Jack. He'd be pretty good with that. So I rang Jack and said, are you okay if I sell your house in Diana Place or should I wait? No, sell it.
Yeah.
So Jack was real happy, and we got on really good ever since.
Yeah, well, there you go. Is that house still standing, do you know?
Yeah,
it is. There you go.
Yeah, it's a nice house too.
Ah, excellent. Now, you pretty quickly, though, move out of that Penrith office head to St Mary's. So what happens there that leads to that?
Yeah, well my dad and his brother were partners in the St Mary's business, and the brother, I think, probably thought, yeah, he would get the Penrith one when Dad retired.
Yeah.
When I turned up and said, here I am in real estate, it was about a year later, the brother thought, well, I don't want to be stuck here in St Mary's and it doesn't look like I'm going to Penrith.
Yeah.
So he said he wanted to sell. So Dad Dad bought him out, and I contributed a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I had to go to St Mary's and learn how to run an office with a year's experience.
And was the Penrith St Mary's, like these days, you could pretty much run the whole thing out of one office. Like,
Yes, that's right.
Running it out of two, was it just that Penrith and St Mary's were a little bit more not as connected as they are today, I guess?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, like we get a little bit of business from St Mary's area, yes, around Colleton, St Clair. Yeah. And it's not too hard to service that because the internet makes it easy. Like we've sold properties down at Campsie recently, up at Hazelbrook and Falconbridge. It's not a hard thing.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing was when I went to St Mary's, I liken it to a little bit like being a football coach. I got to St Mary's with a year's experience.
Yeah.
Really didn't know which way was up and which way was down.
Yeah.
And all of the staff, except for the front desk, they quit in the next 12 months. The property managers, the salesmen, I thought, well, gee, that's a problem, you know, like that can't be good. But then when I thought about it, I got to hire and choose
build your own team.
All the people, and you built your own team. Yeah.
Yep.
And it was like what should happen at the Tigers. You know, they should start again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I basically got to start again, and everybody within 6 or 12 months, everybody who was in the office was people I employed, except the receptionist who stayed with me for 37 years.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it was really a good experience. It turned out good.
What was St Mary's like then? Because I know that Penrith Council now, for example, is putting a lot of effort into St Mary's, because we certainly went through a period where it probably lacked a lot of attention. But in that 80s, 90s era, I see a lot of photos of St Mary's. It's a pretty vibrant place and a very busy place as well.
It was a funny place in the 80s. It was, you almost had to be a cowboy to survive.
Yeah, okay.
I remember walking into, I went to who it is, but another office, and introducing myself to the owner, and because he knocked off a couple of our managements, and I said to Dad, well, what do we do here? And he said, just go down and threaten to bash him. Apparently, that's what you did.
Business in the 80s, huh?
yeah. So, anyway, I walked down to the office. It's down near the railway station, and I said, I'm Greg Taylor, I want to see the owner. And so he said, oh, okay, come on in. Hello, young fella, how are you? And I said, oh, I'm good. Yeah, look, you've knocked off a couple of our managements. I just come to tell you that's not on. You know, like, I don't like it. I'm only new here, but, yeah, that's not the way things are going to work.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, okay. Well, it's lovely to meet you, and I appreciate that you come down and saw me. And he'd already shut the door of his office, and he said, "You know, it's a pretty rough place down here, don't you?" And he said, "You see that shotgun in the corner behind the door?" And I looked at it and I thought, "Holy shit! What have I walked into?" And then he opened the top drawer and he pulled out a handgun. I think it was a 45.
Wow.
And set it on the desk. And he said, this is how we do business down here. And I thought, holy shit. where is this place?
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. But he still does business in town
now.
He
does, okay.
And we're very good mates.
Yep.
And that's how things got dealt with back then.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. It's a very different world today.
That's a good lesson.
Indeed.
I never threatened a bashing.
You spend the next few years in St Mary's, and then early 1990s, make the move back to the Penrith office. So what prompts that?
Yeah, Dad had a heart attack. And things, we were a bit worried. So we sold the business. We spent a few months with the business on the market at St Mary's. We worked out what part of it we were keeping and what part we wanted to sell. So everything west of the St Mary's office we kept, And if it was east of the St. Mary's office, which was Mount Druitt, we said goodbye and sold it.
Sure.
And we found a bunny who wanted to buy it.
Yep.
And so we closed the office and I took some of the staff, moved up to Penrith. We expanded the Penrith office. And that's how we got back to Penrith.
Yep. And a few years after that, your dad opts to retire.
Yeah.
So would have been a big moment for him to make that decision.
Yes, he had another heart attack, and he thought, well, I'm 63, I think I've had enough. And so he opted out. He said to my sister and I, look, this is what you got to do to buy the business. Mm-hmm. So he laid out a plan for us. He vendor funded it, and we had to pay it back.
Yep.
So we paid it back over about 8 years, I think. And so when he walked out of there, basically it was our asses on the line.
Yeah.
And if it went wrong, it was our houses that the bank was going to take. And so we bought into it, and we decided to grow it. We bought a couple of rent rolls. Rain and Horn was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
When Ivan decided he wanted to retire.
Yep.
And so we bought their rent roll. The real estate brokers was another business we bought. So the rent roll and strata roll. And we had a substantial business that was rentals, sales, and strata, and a little bit of commercial.
So. And the strata business sort of almost became what you were known for, even today. So that became a big part of what you guys do.
Yeah, it was. It was something that got started in about mid-90s. Rob, my brother-in-law, decided he wanted to be strata and do that. And so he built it up a little bit himself, and he built it up. He did a good job building it up, and I suppose when we bought the real estate brokers, their business and our business were somewhat comparable in size. And so it became a substantial operation, and it was too big for us to keep it under the one roof.
Sure.
So we divided it up, and my sister and Rob and her family looked after the strata, and I looked after the real estate office.
And this is, so we're now in the late 90s, early 2000s. Mm. What's Penrith like at this point? So you've grown up in a sleepy 1960s, 1970s Penrith, survived St. Mary's, and now back in operating in business in Penrith in that era. What was that era like?
Well, that was interesting times, because coming into GST, and it was a great unknown. The millennium bug, everybody thought the world was going to end at midnight on to 2000. So the computers were gonna fuck up. Oh, I can't say that.
No, that's right. You can say that.
No, the computers were gonna die.
Yep.
So that was an experience and a half. Yeah, we spent all that year 1999 trying to get ready for GST and the millennium bug.
Yep.
And it was pretty scary times, because you didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, for sure.
So then Penrith was just starting to grow, and the mobile phones were becoming more and more prominent, and the way you did business was getting a little bit different.
Mm.
It was an interesting times. Yeah,
I was going to touch on that, because the core of your business has never changed. You're selling you're selling houses, but how you sell houses has changed dramatically over the years. So if you look at, obviously, through the days where it was basically local newspapers were it, and Penrith had its own newspaper war, that thankfully the Western Weekender has survived. Others haven't, but it was often real estate was the key element of that war.
It was, basically,
it was the Penrith Star was the place that, that dominated it. Then it was the Press, and then the Weekender, and they'd all sort of switch between each other. Then you obviously had the displays at the front of the office, and with so many on High Street, that'd be a pretty regular walk for people. You know, waiting for some takeaway or something like that. That was common. But then the internet hits. So tell me about the early days of the internet and where all that came on, and we'll get to where it is now a bit later. But the early days when you first realised, well, something's going to change pretty dramatically here.
Well, it's interesting. Just before that time, there was six of us got together and we said, look, let's go to the papers and see if we can get a better deal, because the papers was where everything happened.
Yeah.
There was no internet. And we got the papers to tender for the business.
Yep.
And we're each going to take a page, and we got all three papers, the Press, the Star, and the Weekender.
Yeah.
And we went with the Weekender.
Smart decision.
Yeah. long-term view.
Yeah.
Anyway, we went with the Weekender because they offered us a great package.
Yeah.
So we got extra pages and the six of us all in the one spot. So we had our six pages and we had a couple of extra pages that they gave us. But we reduced the cost of advertising in the local paper from $1,200 a page in the Weekend, the Press and the Star, to $400 in the Weekender.
Yeah.
So we were all having, that was great. You know, that was happy days.
Yeah.
And but it was interesting, the way you sold properties was you advertised in the paper and the magazine.
Yep.
People wandered through your door and said, I want to see a property. And you put them in your car and you drove them around until 5:30 when all the other offices had shut.
Yeah.
And you showed them everything and anything you could.
Yeah.
But you didn't let them go talk to another office if you could help it.
Yeah.
And you'd walk back into the office and have a look on the spike. All the messages were sitting on the spike. And you'd pick them up and go have a look at, there's one for a value. I'll put that back and someone else can have that.
Yep.
that's what happened. So it was interesting. But when we evolved to the internet, that changed things. It took a while because nobody trusted the internet.
Yeah.
And so we stuck with the papers for a long time. But eventually we were getting, I suppose, the internet went from being free to minimal cost.
Yeah.
And it's gone up and up and up every year.
And there wouldn't be many agents that tell you that that they love realestate.com as far as and domain. Big businesses, but obviously it's become now a pretty costly exercise. You know, it's funny how things evolve, but the costs have pretty much, you know, dramatically increased. And I guess that happens with the two, domain and REA, have control the market now.
Oh, they do. They really do. Like, to advertise a property in Glenmore Park or Penrith, anywhere in the area, on real estate costs us $2,000.
Yeah.
And on domains, $800. So,
and that's for a single property. So you go back in the day when you were putting five or six properties on one page.
Yeah, that's
in the paper. Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking per property.
Yeah.
And so, so now the minimum cost, by the time you take photos, put up a signboard, you produce brochures or pay for brochures, the minimum cost is close to $4,000.
Yeah.
And you've got to get contribution from the vendors or your real estate agents would go broke.
And how does that impact your the branding element of your business? Because back in the day, obviously, you've got your banner across the top of a page in the paper or whatever else. these days, like, no one's going on there and saying, well, let me see all the properties Greg Taylor's listing. They're putting in a suburb and they're seeing it, and the agent will just happen to be the thing that they see in the corner. So has that impacted that side of it as well?
It has, yeah. Like, there's a number of ways that you can, I guess, try to brand your office. So on the actual ad of the property, you've got your branding. You can pay for branding on the page, on the side of the page, and that is getting expensive too, because they auction that off every 6 months.
Right, okay.
So welcome to the auction. So
whoever's had a good last 6 months is coming out on top.
Yeah, yeah, so happy days, you know, put your hand in your pocket and pay for that. And you can't get that back from a vendor, you know, you can't change that.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, I guess the way that it's changed is it's no longer as important to have the branding outside of a building where your office sits.
Yeah.
Like, we have massive signs all over the front of our building and all over the side of it. And it's no longer as important because you don't see people looking in your window all day every day.
Yeah.
You know, they just look on the internet. So, you know, like, there are offices that don't have a front office. They're upstairs.
Yeah.
So, you know, and there's a number of, there's more and more.
Mm.
And so, you know, it's no longer as important to be visible, I guess. Yeah.
Most industries have faced disruption at some level, a lot of it tech-based. And a few years ago there, real estate was in that world, Purple Bricks and a few of those. I actually bought a house through Purple Bricks.
Obviously, oh, did you?
not my choice. That was where the vendor was. But that was like, you know, there was this real estate's now got its disruptor moment, its Uber moment, you know.
Yeah.
And it disappeared pretty quickly. So what do you think happened there? What went wrong as far as that was concerned? And we went back almost to just, no, local agents are kind of where it's at.
Yeah, I think what happened was the Purple Bricks, it was individuals that handled the franchise for a location. And unless they got a lot of stock, a lot of listings, a lot of sales, it was very hard for them to continue on.
Yeah.
And generally, I think what happened was it was an individual that held the Purple Bricks franchise. He or she probably didn't have assistance. He's just operating on his own.
Yeah.
So, you know, look, I can't get back to you right now. I'm busy doing something else. And so people didn't get callbacks. They didn't get service.
Mm.
And I don't think they did much property management.
Yeah.
They were mostly salespeople that went in for that.
Mm.
So at the time, investors were buying a lot of properties. And so APRA hadn't interfered with putting the interest rates for investors. It hadn't happened yet. And I think the reason it failed was lack of service.
Mm.
And you were not visible anywhere other than the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've evolved to the point where that probably works now.
Yeah.
But it didn't work then.
What about competition? You've outlasted everyone, basically, in Penrith. And obviously, there's some other long-serving agents around town. But as we mentioned at the top, the longest running in Penrith. Mm. What's been the secret to success, do you think, that you know, you've seen some big-name agents over the years disappear out of Penrith? What's been the difference?
I think everybody we employ, we say to the staff, We're in business to provide a service for people.
Yep.
And we want them to have a good experience, whether they're buying, selling, or renting. And they're all people at the end of the day, and treat them how you want to be treated.
Mm.
If you want people to rip you off and do bad things to you, if that's how you want to be treated,
yeah,
you're not the right person to work here.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've turfed a few people out the door over the years.
Yeah.
They weren't the right people.
Yeah, sure. But, so yeah. It comes down to people.
It does. And the people we've got working in the operation now are good people, and most of them have been with us a long time, the core of them, and we got a few new ones that are in there now, but they all know what we want and how we like things to be, and we want people to walk away saying, go talk to Stanton and Taylor, they really looked after us.
Over the years, we've also seen lots of mergers, lots of takeovers.
Yep.
How many knocks on the door over the years to say, we want to buy it or we want to join? Like, it must have happened.
Yeah, we've been approached by a number of franchises. We were with First National for 38 years.
Yeah.
And even when we were First National organisation, we were approached by other organisations looking to have an office in Penrith. And the funny thing was, every single one of them had a model that worked by you paying to be part of their organisation. And when I sat down with a number of them, I said, "Well, look, we've got a big rent roll, so." What happens there? You know, the sales that come off the rental business. Do you want to put your hand in our pocket for a share of that?
Yeah.
Or what about you want a share of the commission off the rental business? And they all looked at me like I had two heads.
Yeah.
And I talked to them all for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And I said, I guess this conversation's over now. So there's the door.
Yeah. There you go.
So we haven't really been interested.
You mentioned your wife earlier as well, and kids. So tell me about that. When did you get married?
At St. Stephen's.
Yep.
And we've been married now for 44 years.
Yep.
And we've got two children that are both working in the business.
Yeah, I was going to say they both took different paths to get to the business, but both involved in the business.
Yeah, they did. Similar things to what I did. Michael's a qualified lawyer. He worked in insurance law, and he worked in the city, and he was in court pretty much every day. So it was a hard life for him. Once he finished in court, he was back in the office until 8, 9, 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
So he decided he'd had enough and said, I think I might like to come and work in the business again.
Yep.
Because he worked there as a young fella when he was at school. And so he came back, and he runs a conveyancing business as well as he runs our property management team.
Yep.
And Amanda was a magazine editor for Channel 7.
And had a stint here at the Western Weekender.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, she worked in the Weekender as a youngster, and she was the editor of Total Girl.
Yep.
So she did that for a fair few years. She got a master's in publishing, and so she's got plenty of experience with advertising, marketing, and she looks after a lot of our online stuff. So she's been back in the office for 5 or 6 years now, and she's learning her way around the property management as well, because it's such a big part of our business. So, yeah, I'm hoping we had the retirement chat only this week.
Well, I was going to ask you, what do you see the future for your business? But then also, it's a two-part question, the future for Penrith as well. Having seen it grow as you have over the last many decades, where do you see your business and where do you see Penrith?
Okay, well, with our business, I think what might happen is when they turf me out, I think they're probably going to look to expand in a number of ways. And go back towards the model where you need to be have a presence in a few locations.
Yep, okay.
And so...
because we are seeing that with, say, a new shopping centre pops up and you often see a couple of real estate brands go in there. So there's obviously some method to that that works.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got to work out a model that works where the main office... has provides all the facilities for administration and accounting, and we just put a sales staff in locations.
Yeah,
I think maybe that's the way it'll go. But interesting, what's happening with real estate now, and it's only been the last 18 months or so. The industry is insisting on all agents being licensed, and that has to come into effect fairly soon. In I think it may be a year or two.
Yeah.
So with all agents having a license, I think what may happen, and I'm starting to see a little bit of it now. It might go the way of America, where you've got lots of individuals being a licensed real estate agent.
Yeah.
Yeah, a taxi driver could be a licensed real estate agent.
Yeah.
And he's selling the odd house or two.
Yeah, okay.
So I think it could go down that road, but it'll be difficult to get a license, at least.
Mm.
You won't get them out of a cornflakes pack.
But, yeah, sure.
But... It will be awkward for people to get, but once they've got it, they've got to say, well, what do I do with it? Do I want to work for an organisation or just run something, sell a few houses myself?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
So that's I think, the way we're headed.
And are you going to be around for this, or are you feeling like retirement is closer than that?
I want to play golf and go do bowls and sporty stuff.
Yeah,
you know, like I'm having a lot of fun. Yeah, you know, just learnt to lawn bowl and it turns out I'm pretty good at it.
There you go.
So I'm looking forward to doing more of that, and I'll just gradually work a little bit less. I'll still have a presence.
Yep.
Yeah, like. If you want to talk to Greg, ring him on his mobile and he might ring you back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a good way to be. Yeah. And what about Penrith? Where do you think Penrith sits now and its future? Particularly with the airport, obviously only a couple of years away.
That's right. I think the airport is going to be the greatest thing that's ever happened to Penrith. You know, like it'll be open in 2026. Melissa McIntosh is fighting for where the runways are pointed.
Yeah, all the noise and all that sort of stuff.
But I think what's going to happen out there is just massive, and the impact on Penrith it should be, if our council approach it the right way, we should be a massive beneficiary. And property in the Penrith City Council area, when you look at it relative to Sydney, it's still cheap. And it's funny, you hear the news, the television, all the stations are talking about where cheapest property has been sold this week, and it's always in suburbs like Blacktown, Fairfield. They never include Penrith, and yet we're on the Sydney Telephone Exchange.
Yeah,
I always thought we were part of Sydney. We're a suburb of Sydney.
We are indeed. Yeah,
but apparently we're not.
Yeah,
and. It's like we're unknown.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the airport, we're 15 minutes from the airport. How can it not be a great thing?
Yeah, it's going to be a significant game changer and big for businesses too. Final question, and the question that always tends to stump people, but how would Greg Taylor like to be remembered in Penrith?
Well, that's a good question. I think... I've never really thought about that, but I guess if people who maybe have bought a house or sold a house with us, you know, in 20 years' time, they're sitting there talking to my son or my daughter, and they say, "Oh, we bought our house from your old man, and it was a really good experience." You know, like,
yep.
I think that'd be nice.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, Greg, great story and a great longevity story for business in Penrith as well, and the business still cracking along there on High Street. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Troy. It's been great.
And I hope you enjoyed our chat. On the Record is produced by The Western Weekender. To hear future episodes, search Western Weekender wherever you listen to podcasts and make sure you hit subscribe. Check out westernweekender.com.au and we will see you next time.